slightly delayed on beginning the recording, but we are called to order and our online recording is now started. Sally, would you please call the roll?
Ernest?
Here.
Galt?
Here.
Glenderman?
Here.
Moore?
Here.
Here.
Youngblood?
Here.
And we have quorum with all six counselors present. Do I have a motion to approve tonight's agenda?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from two. We're going to go with Fran with the motion and Millie with the second to approve tonight's agenda. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have an agenda. We have had one request from Fran due to the way the day has gone. He is not wearing hearing aids and he's asked that we speak up slightly more than usual and speak directly please. At him when needed. The first item is the consent agenda. I have 10 items for consideration. I would like to pull item number 6 for separate consideration. Are there any other requests?
Make a motion. We approve items 1 through 10.
I'd like to pull item 6 for separate consideration.
Okay.
So I'd like 1 through 5.
1 through 5 and 7 through 10.
Yep, perfect.
Second.
Thank you. We have motion and second for 1 through 5 and 7 through 10. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Item number 6 can be approved. I just wanted to have that separate than the rest of the regular business. That is all. So we're good to go on number 6.
I make a motion to approve number 6.
Consent. Second.
I have a motion from Millie and the second from Fran on item number 6. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And we have our former Mayor Johnson in the house. I almost would get nervous because this is our first overlap. Good to see you. Our next item of business is special event request. We have one from Marion Avenue Baptist Church, and I see Pastor Brown is with us for this request. Is there anything, if you don't mind using the microphone for anyone that's joined online, if you'd like to introduce the event real quick, and we'll see if council has any questions or if there's specifically anything different from years past.
Right. Yeah. Everything will be the same. We call it Christmas Street. We have a tent. It allows people to be in holding before they go into the building. It is December 9th through 12th, basically Saturday and Sunday, but they set up the tent. The company sets up the tent on Friday afternoon. So it's right in front of our church on Marion Avenue, just the portion in front of our church. And everything's the same.
So, thank you for that. Yep. Council, are there any questions on the Marion Avenue Baptist street closure request for December 9th through the 12th?
I had a question about insurance. I just saw that part was blank in our packet.
Not checked. Sometimes we have that on file. Sally, do you have an update or Pastor Brown on the insurance piece?
So Mike Griswold is sick and couldn't be here, so he asked me to come. He takes care of all this every year. He said we have applied for the special whatever, or he had the thing. I just don't have it today.
So if it's okay, I think we'll make the approval contingent on proof of insurance.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And it says the 12th, which is a Monday, correct?
Let's see. Yeah, it did change from 9 to 12.
From Monday morning, so it isn't all day Monday. It's just until they can get everything out of the way.
Just the portion. Mm-hmm. Very good.
And the same for Friday. So it's really Saturday and Sunday.
With a tiny overlap.
Correct. Set up and tear down.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Any other questions, council?
I motion to approve contingent on insurance. Second.
So I have the motion from Bethany to approve contingent on insurance, and I think Millie snagged the second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
We will continue forward. Our next item is presentation from the public. If there's anyone from the public that would like to address council, this would be the time. Has anyone signed up? Of course, if you have an agenda item, we will do that on the agenda for anyone joining online. So for that reason, we will, unless I've missed anyone, we'll move out of presentation from the public into claims. Kelsey.
All right. I did get some questions ahead of time, so I will go over those. Under fire for Star Food Service Equipment, the freezer heater drain line was replaced in the big stand-up freezer thing. Under fire as well, under Better Performance Inc., truck number 4 repair, that was actually to repair an exhaust leak. Under road use, Henderson Products Inc. for equipment repair, that was for a 2009 dump truck hydraulic leak that they fixed on the tank and then fixed the spreader on the back as well. I guess it's never entirely worked. So that fixed that problem. Under library for KCTC, I think it was a mix of library and library gift. There were two new children's computers purchased for just over $2,000, and then a wireless access point that was purchased for just over $3,000. Under road use for U-Line, the dry erase board, it was just a 6-foot by 4-foot whiteboard that maintenance will put their tasks on. So when somebody's done with something, they can go up to the board and see what's available. Sewer plant, the Smith and Loveless grit chamber gearbox. I asked Jason, but he's here to answer more questions if needed. He said that a bearing went out, so it locked up and it needed replaced. So, and the gearbox creates some vortex and settles the grit or something. I don't know. It's part of the process, so it needed fixed. If anybody has any additional questions, I will point you to Jason. Good deal. And then lastly, the downtown commercial TIF for Marshall's properties, the TIF rebate. We have a development agreement with Marshall's, and in this point in the development agreement, we're paying 75% back of the TIF revenue that we receive. This is a 10-year agreement, and we are on year 6. One more question that also came in for $136.50 on the hotel motel for website storage. We can't do the website storage yearly anymore. We have to do it monthly on a credit card, which is not my favorite thing in the whole entire world. So that's split between half hotel motel and half city.
Thank you, Kelsey. Are there any other questions for Kelsey on claims that we missed? That was a whole list this time. Wow. Any missing questions?
What on hotel motel, it does say lodging.
Yeah, so when we pay a credit card bill, anything that's put in the description all goes on there. So the lodging was for the League of Cities, so it just happened to transfer to all of the departments.
And did we get a Visa statement? Is that just once a month or?
So you would have gotten it with the claims that I sent out this month. We usually pay it. It's due by the 4th, so it's usually the last or the very first meeting in the month.
It's the second attachment in that email.
Oh, okay. I guess I missed that. Okay. All right. I'll check that next time. Thank you.
Any other questions for Kelsey on claims?
I'm making a motion to accept claims for November 1st, 2022. Second.
Thank you, Steve, for the motion. And Elaine snagged the second to approve these claims. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. We have claims. We'll move into new business. The first item is the overview of our hotel evaluation report. There was a 47-page report that everyone's received. There was a 4-page executive summary. And we do have Michael Houle that is joining us virtually. Michael, if you unmute, I'll turn the floor over to you to introduce, and then we can turn it over to council for any questions. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Hear me all right?
I can hear you. Hold on 1 second while we work on that. We'll have Sally come fix it. One moment. Thank you for your patience. We just need to switch our audio.
Sure, that's fine.
Michael, will you try talking one more time?
Okay, can you hear me now?
We can, but we need to change one more thing, it looks like.
All right.
Let's try again.
All right, how does this sound? Is that better? I'm going to try again.
Will you try one more time, Michael?
Okay. How does this sound now?
Yep. I'm starting to get it. Let's try pulling up. Is it volume on this tablet? One more time, Michael.
Okay, technology's great, isn't it? When it works.
Whatever
the
situation was, it has resolved, and thank you for your patience.
Oh, that's great. And so, okay, from an introduction standpoint, and I presume everyone has a copy of the 4-page executive summary. Just a little bit about my background. I do have a CPA, and I'm a member of the International Society of Hospitality Consultants. I've been in the hotel industry over 35 years and doing feasibility studies, such as similar to your project, for over the last 20 years. And prior to that, I was a controller and director of development for Marcus Hotels Resorts. And I can go back a lot further, but I didn't. From this standpoint. The point being is I have a significant amount of experience in the hotel industry and doing feasibility studies for communities such as yours, limited service style properties all over the US, including other projects in Iowa and all over the Midwest. And like I say, all over the US. And I am just gonna go through briefly through this executive summary and then like to hear any questions about the project and the report. And the project, the goal was to determine the feasibility of developing an upper mid-scale limited service style hotel with banquet meeting space to accommodate approximately 350 attendees. That was arrived at by talking to several different people and what did we think the average size of weddings were. And they would need the banquet meeting space adjacent, approximate, or part of the hotel so that they would be close to it. That's the best case scenario. Three different potential sites were identified while I was in the city. And they were, one was, there's the farmland proximate to and west of the Walmart. Hopefully you all, I'm confident you all understand where I'm talking about. Then there was a second one was farmland on the west side of Airport Road, and a little better, further description, a little just south, immediately south of, there's a company that's there on the main street that's on there and Airport Road, and it'll be immediately south of there. And then the third one was the current middle school building. And there are, and you'll see on this, in these different areas in this executive summary, I have in blue, if you want to see more detail describing all these things and getting into the specifics, I've highlighted the pages for you as to where to go look at, and also how the sites were evaluated in terms of they were evaluated in a variety of categories in terms of visibility, accessibility, land preparation, any environmental issues, also in terms of zoning, architectural requirements, and support services, and competitive position. And in that, and there is a chart that goes through that on page, probably it's probably on page 13 of the report, which I think, and it lays out that probably the one that came out, I think, with the highest rating was the farmland approximate to and west of the Walmart. And also one of the categories there is the visibility of the site that it goes into. And some of the research that was done, a lot of it, there were several different parts of it, the research that I did. One of it was a focus group meeting that was held while I was in Washington with there was local officials there. There were some local business owners and leaders there. And we had and then there were discussions held with other people that couldn't attend that meeting to determine how much how much need there is for a hotel. And I asked some very specific questions to some of the people in terms of, well, how many rooms do you generate or would you need for different types of uses? And also, and identify the probable market area that the hotel in Washington would primarily be its focus on generating demand from. And that is the city of Washington and also the surrounding area of Washington County. And in doing this research also, I identified a competitive set. And there are two different components of this competitive set. One is a preliminary one. And that was an identifying operating hotels that I can use, go to a data service that will tell me how those hotels are performing as a group, meaning from an historic standpoint, their occupancy as a group, their average daily rate as a group. And that gives me, I'll say, a basis point as to where to start from with a potential hotel in Washington. All four of those hotels were located in Mount Pleasant. Yes, that is not in Washington. I realize that. It's, I think, 20-some miles away from Washington. But those hotels were referred to at times in discussions with local people about referring people there. But then it's all, and the reason there is, that's the, and I used the preliminary, I wanted to separate the two competitive sets. And I was able to find out specifically how that group was, has been performing from 2014 through June of 2022, this year. Then, but a lot of, I'll say there were several discussions where people said that they were referring people to hotels up in Iowa City or to the casino resort hotel. But those hotels, one, the resort casino hotel, that doesn't report to the service. So I can't include that in that group. And also their rates are much higher and it's a nicer hotel. Also, the hotels in Iowa City that I included in the primary competitive set, I used the primary competitive set to arrive at a projected average daily rate for the hotel. Because the hotel that you were looking to want to have developed would be what I call an upper mid-scale style hotel. And that is much nicer than the ones that are in Mount Pleasant. The ones in Mount Pleasant are, one's an economy hotel, and then the other three are mid-scale hotels where you're looking at a slightly nicer one. But the reason, and do most of the hotels that are in Iowa City report to that data service? Yes, but those hotels also generate, primarily their business comes from all of the university that's up there, I-80, a lot of the different events that occur up there. And so that would not have given me a true picture of how a hotel in Washington might have performed, but it does give me a picture of what the average daily rate could be for a hotel in Washington, and which is why I have two different competitive sets, the preliminary one and the primary one. The primary one is focused on being utilized to arrive at the average daily rate, or as you'll see in the report a lot, ADR. And the preliminary was utilized to arrive at being able to project an occupancy stamp from an projected occupancy for the proposed hotel. Some of the other things that I looked at from a research standpoint are the economics and demographics of the area, meaning the population trend changes and the income changes. Also the unemployment over the last 10 years. And the average unemployment in Washington County is 3.5%. The unemployment was not available for the city of Washington, but it was available for the county. I also looked at the employment in Washington County. And you can see here that I list on here, and there is a chart in the report on the pages that it talks about that goes through and shows out all the industry sectors. But the major ones that were there, the top five, were health and social assistance, retail trade, accommodation and food services, educational services, and construction. And the total of them, a total of those industry sectors totaled to 63.7% of the total employment for the greater Washington market, which was Washington, I consider Washington County. That 63.7% is, I'll say, a significant number because you have a diversified workforce there. Generally speaking, we have found that in all the years I've been doing this, that as long as that total, the top five industry sectors, is less than the 65, is within the 65 to 70% range or less than that, then you have a diversified workforce. As long as you don't have one individual industry sector being at a really large number, say a 25, 30 or 40%. And I have seen that. You don't see this here. So it's good that there is a diversified employment base in your in the market. I then went into the lodging demand that is there for the hotel that would be in the area. What is the demand for hotel rooms is what this is getting at. And I break it down into two different groups, corporate commercial, which is generally midweek demand, and then social leisure, which is generally weekend business. And we also broke those two groups, those two segments into weekend corporate getting ahead of myself here. And they're broken down into individual segments, individual business and group business. And to clarify that a little bit, I'll describe what I consider group: weddings and reunions. And people are coming in as a group of people, they're coming in as a group for a group meeting or group gathering. That is a group. And the good thing, the biggest thing was weddings. Also sports teams, youth sports teams was very big. And we had some talks with the people that run the your wellness sports complex in terms of the teams that are generating there. Jaron, were you saying something?
Yes. Can you refresh on what the difference between the preliminary competitive set and the primary competitive set is, as I'm looking through some of the statistics you refer, like your average daily rate for the preliminary, but then I don't see it for the primary. Just remind me, please, the difference between the two.
The preliminary competitive set was utilized primarily for, and I hate to use, I will say that, to determine a baseline for the occupancy that I would arrive at, that I would utilize in arriving at a projected occupancy for a hotel in Washington. Because I was able to from this data service that I requested a report from, it tells me what those four hotels did and how their demand has grown. But their average daily rates are much lower than what your hotel in Washington would be able to get. So I had a different competitive set that I utilized to arrive at a projected average daily rate for the hotel in Washington. And that was the group of hotels that was from Iowa City and the resort, the casino resort.
So is that your primary that you're referring to?
That's the primary. The primary was utilized to arrive at the projected average daily rates, or ADRs. The preliminary was used to arrive at projected occupancies.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, let's see. Going back into the lodging demand. Again, there was, you have corporate, commercial, and social lease are the two general types, but then both of those are broken down into group and individual business. And some of the major lodging demand generator segments were visiting family and friends. Yes, you do have, I believe there was a motel in the city of Washington. There is one there. There's two. There's two there. Those are both economy rated hotels. The gist that I got, that the desire was for a nicer hotel. I don't want to say a luxurious hotel, but a more upper mid-scale style hotel. And just to give you examples of what that type of hotel is, it could be a Hampton Inn, a Holiday Inn Express, Comfort Inn, Fairfield Inn and Suites. Those style of hotels are what I consider upper mid-scale. Weddings was a major group demand generator. We received information from the Knights of Columbus Hall in terms of how many weddings they were averaging a month and the average size. And using some of my historical information that I've gathered over the years, we estimated that 35% of the wedding guests would most likely require a hotel room, and basically for two nights. Then there would be double occupancy, meaning two to a room. And that could potentially generate, with one to two weddings per month, an average 300 attendees, that equates to almost 1,900 room nights, a significant number, primarily on weekends though. Also, another really significant number, and I find in communities, is funerals. And thanks to Deanna, she helped a lot with the research and getting me in touch with people in terms of finding out things. And we found out that in funerals, there was an average of 10 funerals per month, and the average number of attendees was 150 to 175. And then the potential number of room nights from there was 3,600 room nights. We also looked at the wellness park and talked to the people that are running that and booking the teams and the tournaments that are there. And all of these, including the youth sports, we were told primarily they do refer some people to Mount Pleasant, but they are referring them to the casino resort hotel and also to properties up in Iowa City. And there were also some discussions held with some of the major employers that we can get in touch with. And I list them on here. And from these employers that I was able to talk to, there was a potential room night of another 1,300 room nights. And your business room night demand is primarily midweek business. And again, it's important to have both midweek and weekend business. A hotel can't survive just on weekend business or maybe midweek, but it's got to have both. From a market segmentation, the way I broke it down in my estimate for the hotel, there's individual travelers, 65%, group business was going to be 35%. Also, what is the seasonality of the lodging demand in your market area? And looking at that preliminary competitive set, the primary business or the primary season was May through October. The slow season being December through February. And that was also confirmed by discussions with people in the community. And what I like to typically look at is unaccommodated lodging demand. And there are two types of that. One is that the first prefers to stay in the subject market, Washington, but currently stays in other areas due to the lack of adequate accommodations, either due to condition or a number of available rooms. Well, that definitely is happening in Washington with the market there. And the second type is lodging demand staying in the subject market, the city of Washington, but actually desiring accommodation in other areas. That type of unaccommodated lodging demand is not occurring. And let's see, the lodging supply. And this talks about the different members of the two different competitive sets. First, again, there was the preliminary competitive set, and there was one economy property and three mid-scale properties, and they were all located in Mount Pleasant. And their average size was 59.3 rooms of those four properties. And their projected and their actual, that's their actual ADR for 2010. That was not projected. Their actual ADR for 2021 was $80.53 for calendar. For the group of those four, that's what they received from an average daily rate standpoint for the year. For 2022, they're projected to grow at 7.6%, and that's based on how did they grow historically. That's how I arrived at that. And looking at the average of that. And it also goes into more detail of my arriving at that in the report on the pages that are listed above there. And then also, from 2023 and all future years, I use the growth rate for average daily rate of 3.7%.
Before we go to your last page, how you arrive at the market segmentation that you mentioned of individuals at 65% and group or business at 35%, where does that number come from?
That comes in my discussions and looking at the people and above the rooms above, or I'll say the information above or previously, whoops, my desk light just went off. There we go. It's a culmination of looking at all the different lodging demand that I arrived at in my research and how much of that is believed to be individual versus group business. And primarily I looked at, and also looking at the recommended size of the hotel, that the recommended size of the hotel was a 60 room hotel. And if you take that times 365 days, you get the total rooms available. And I looked at what the group room projected total group rooms might be, what percent that is of that, of the total available. And then also looking at then the, and coming up with the occupancy, the difference would be the percentage would be the individual breakdown. And it's and it is more from an individual than it is group. Group is somewhat limited.
So the, I think the answer that I heard is it's an educated guess based off of the surveys that you take while you're in town.
Those are the basis of it. And also the research that was done after I left town in terms of the information that Deanna was able to help me gather from that.
Thank you.
And it's applying those results to the total available rooms. Where does it fit in as a group? And what percent that is of the total available rooms? And then also what I have for projected occupancy for the total for the year, okay, for the hotel.
I'm on your last page. I was jumping back a tiny bit.
That's okay.
And we'll turn it over to council for any questions they have.
Okay, do you want me to go on through the last page then? Okay. We talked about the demand growth and how it grows. It's been growing at that 7.12%. It goes into more detail, but that is probably based on the average growth for the prior, could be one of two ways, the prior 3 years, or it might have been what it was through the first 6 months of 2022, and then a percentage of that, because I don't use all of it. That might be like 75% of it, of what the growth rate was so far. And then the 2.37% was probably the growth rate for that preliminary competitive set for the five-year history of 2014 through 2019. I did not rely much on the data for 2020. COVID was an abnormal year, and industry experts of all, industry pundits have all said that they expect the hotel industry to recover to 2019 levels by sometime in 23 or 24. But hopefully that is the case. And on the last page, it talks about the potential supply growth. The only potential supply growth I saw in your market area is the proposed hotel. And the occupancy for 2020 and 21, that should be the growth. That is the growth. I need to take a look and see what that is. I think that there could be a typo there in terms of what that is. The rate positioning, the proposed limited service style hotel was to achieve what this 147.6% yield to the average ADR, the preliminary, it gets into a base of the size of the hotel compared to the competitive set. And then also a very large piece of this was the preliminary competitive set that I used the base for determining the occupancy. It does not have in there any of the business that I've used in my projections that are going, say, to the casino or up to the hotels in Iowa City. So that was a whole new piece that is not in there. And so there were premiums provided in that. And it goes into more detail again on pages 29 and 31. And in terms of the recommendations, it's recommended a 60-room limited service style hotel, upper mid-scale. And I'm suggesting up to 10% of the rooms as suites, maybe even a couple of extended stay style suites, if possible. Doesn't have to, but that might be a possibility because I gather that there were a couple of possible, like with traveling nurses, that they're okay, that would be available for that, or it could use those extended stay style rooms. The targeted market, the targeted people or that your hotel would be targeting would be weddings, family reunions, funerals, other social events, youth sports teams participating in tournaments at the new wellness center. Also, it came out that there's overflow from Carville in Iowa City with the events, especially at the University of Iowa. There's home football games there. It fills rooms for probably a 50-mile radius or more. Even more than that potentially. And then also corporate travelers seeking quality lodging while calling on businesses in Washington. And that did come up where in speaking to some of the businesses that they were saying they're sending their people to either to Iowa City or to the casino resort because of that. And then I go into the third year of occupancy. And right now, this is just my conjecture. That if the hotel opened up in 2024, 25, 26, generally from a measurement standpoint, you look at the third year of operations and how is it performing then. And this is showing a projected occupancy of 69.2% with an average daily rate of $147.98. We come up with the, over the years, we've come up with a, what we call a benchmark development cost. And that is just to give you as a community and also the developer an idea of what it might cost. It's not saying that it has to cost that. There could be reasons why it would cost more than that, or it might cost less than that. But we are saying this is what we feel our projections will support.
Very good. I want to turn it over to council for questions that they have before I close out. This has been provided to our economic development partners. They are not all here tonight, but it has been passed around in full and executive summary. Council, any questions? Steve, I think this is, yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to know where you got your facts for your funeral stuff, because I've talked to the directors and you're way high on some of it, as in 75 people is an average for all one of the funerals, and 175 people is a very large funeral. You are right on the money on the amount of funerals, but you're, from what I'm gathering, you're overall, how many people are going to be there, and COVID has really put a hanky in.
And Steve lives across a funeral home and knows a funeral director personally, so that's a differing data on your number of attendees.
Okay, and there was information that was provided to us in Deanna. Is Deanna there?
Yes.
And now I'm looking through my notes, but I'm not finding it right away. But the discussions with one of the funeral directors indicated that.
Right, not the one that Steve is referring to. That was a different one.
Other questions for...
By the way, I just want to let you know, I do think we need this. I was just asking where, what's the difference in the figures.
I understand. It's a very good question. And it's, I can only rely, if a funeral director provides you with that information, that's what I go with.
I was curious, and I'm happy you could adjust your schedule to join us tonight. With your contract, the information typically takes 30 days or less, and it took 74. What was the cause for delay with our report and the information coming together for Washington?
Some of it was, I'll say, gathering the information, because not all of it was gathered when I was there. So we were setting up phone calls and meetings with other people. And then, frankly, as we were putting the report together, we have a proofing process, a review and proofing process within our company, and Hurricane Ian happened right in the middle of that. I don't like to provide excuses. It's a good question, and we try very hard to make that time. And I think I'm not sure what it says in your engagement letter. I'd have to pull that out and look at it. But typically, it takes anywhere from about 45 to 60 days from the time we complete our field research. And the field research is not the date that I am there, but it's completing all of the research, which would be when we've gathered that information from the people that Deanna worked with me and helped and was a great assistance in gathering some of that information that went on for at least 2 to 3 weeks after I was there, Deanna?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for
sure.
Clarification. Not related to the information itself, but I just wondered what caused the delay. So thank you.
That's fine.
Are there any other questions for Michael?
So your report indicates that we could support another hotel, correct?
It indicates that, and I'll elaborate a little more. There's that projected occupancy of 69.2% in a 30-year of operations. Typically in the industry, once a market is running in the 60 plus occupancy, pushing 70%, that's when you see new hotel development being considered. So this is 69.2, you're pushing 70%. A lot of it comes down to in terms of cost factors though, and the economy, which both of those I have no control over.
What would examples of cross factors be?
The cross factors, I'd say the cost of land. And that can vary so much from project to project, depending on where I'm working on and the approach that the city is taking. I am not by any means trying to negotiate with the city for a developer, but let's just say some communities are willing to throw the land in for a dollar. That helps out in terms of allowing for more cost. And in some places where you have the city doesn't own the land and the site has to be acquired, and how much is that? And then construction costs. They went through the roof during COVID, especially the cost of lumber. I heard recently the cost of lumber is coming down, but the cost of concrete is going up. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play there, plus financing costs, and now interest rates are going up.
So those would be cross factors. Thank you. I'm not in this field, so that helps me.
Okay, sure.
Other questions for Michael before we move on?
Maybe not a question, but more of a statement, Michael, if you can help me out here. In your targeting markets, you didn't include overflow from the casino. I have a lot of people that I do know that work there, and a lot of times they don't have rooms. Then they're sending people to Iowa City. Did you take that into account?
No, I didn't. That idea never came up. Now you're saying people who work there that need a place to stay, or they're working there and they know people that are gambling and they want a place to stay and they can't, so they're sending them to Iowa City.
Like this last weekend, they hosted a national poker tournament and there was probably 5,000 gamblers there that they don't normally have.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying. And yes, that was not considered. It didn't come up in any of the discussions in terms of that type of thing. And it's a good point. So that's, I'll say, I would consider that like a poker tournament. I would consider that they're coming there as a group for that. Okay. So I would consider that more in the group business, but you get into a lot of gray areas as to where different, types of demand fits in. That could fit into group or it could fit into individual travelers. But it's a good thing to think of and keep in mind in terms of with the looking at the developer. And in fact, I can just add that into in terms of the targeted market.
Thank you, Fran. Thank you, Michael.
Good point.
Thank you.
I did think of another question. Do we have to determine the current occupancy rate at our local, our two local hotels? Did you have that?
No, I did not. I did not consider them competitors, being economy rated hotels. The people that are going to be staying at this hotel are going to be paying, I would think, significantly more than people that are staying there. This hotel is going to be, I envision it being, I'll say, 3-4 stories, interior corridor, with a complimentary probably buffet breakfast in the morning, being not your drive up and park in front of motel rooms, okay?
Although they're not competitors with the ADR that you list, aren't they competitors by the very nature that they are the only hotel in town?
Well, let's just say, and I don't know what their rates are, but you saw what the projected rate for this hotel is at $147. I would guess that they're probably anywhere at most $75, half of this. So they're not really that. The only time they could be competitors if you've got a team coming in that is looking to be very frugal with what they're going to spend. But I did not hear that any of the teams were staying at those hotels. Some of them might be, but that did not come up as a primary place where, say, the youth sports teams are staying.
So the hotel motel study does not include anything about the hotel motels in Washington. It's all about feasibility for additional.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, I've heard enough. Is there anyone else? No, I think this is perfect.
just a statement. They're looking at one of your third site, and I will call it a site, not a building, would be the old middle school.
Yes.
Location, location, location would be my three words.
Is that good or bad?
Good. That would be a good location, just a bad building.
Oh, gotcha. Well, maybe good for a hotel with enough investment, but not good for students in the current educational climate. Yeah.
And in terms of, I'm just relating to that, I just went to the chart that's on page 13 and evaluates all three sites. I understand what you're saying for that because it's not far from downtown, which is good for the businesses there. But a lot of what you want from a hotel standpoint is visibility. And people on the route driving through town, on the main route that goes through town, coming in from the east, they're not going to see the hotel. So the visibility isn't only good, it's not great. And its accessibility is good on this chart. The land prep, I rated it as fair because, as you say, it's an old building, historic building. I don't know what the condition is from a standpoint of environmental things and asbestos and things like that. It needs a lot of things to be investigated for that. But it's interesting from a support services, it was a strong good. And you can find that chart that compares all three sites in the different categories, 113, and prior to that, on the pages prior to it, it discusses each of how those ratings were arrived at. And I understand what you're saying, and I don't know, is that building an historic building?
Yes, it was built in 1918.
So it's on the National Historic Register?
It's I don't know about the register.
I don't
the
know
historic register.
Because what I'm getting at is historic tax credits. If they would be available for somebody going into work, if they chose to go into that, that could be the biggest benefit of that site, in my opinion, if those historic tax credits are available for it. But there could be significant costs from an environmental and abatement standpoint.
The 47-page report is great. I appreciate the detail that goes into in that regard. I think we have one more question, Michael.
Sure.
Why was there not any thought given to the land we already own out by the fairgrounds?
The question was why there was not any thought given to the land we own out by the fairgrounds. And I think the answer is there was three sites, and there was kind of the sites that have had existing interest.
Accessibility.
Any reason that there were only three sites? Did you consider any other sites besides the three that you listed?
Those were the three sites that were identified to me when I was in town.
But that would be, that's a great point. We would have another site not listed, and we can use our skills of deduction, knowing its location, Highway 1, proximity, the people that own it, which are the city of Washington, and the utilities are all there.
And we also have an extension on what we can buy around it.
And we have an extension on what we can buy around it. So we can kind of deduce that there is a fourth site that could potentially be good.
And I went to the map in the report. Where are the fairgrounds located?
On the southwest side of town.
Southwest side. Okay. So over by Highway 1 there?
Highway 1 and 92.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then it would have, if it was built right on the, I'll say within visibility of the Highway 1, it would have the visibility from travelers going through the city. And that's an important thing because people may not, the first time they see it, they may not stop there, but then they see it and when they're coming through another time, let's just say it's late at night and they don't want to drive any further. They don't want to go all the way to have to go to Carlville or up to the casino. They know that there's a hotel in Washington that they can stop at.
Right on the juncture of 92 and what Highway 1.
There's two state highways there, in fact, that intersect.
Okay. Yeah, I remember driving through that intersection. I just didn't remember exactly where the fairgrounds was in regards to that. Okay.
Well, thank you very much for the time and the detailed information. We're going to continue forward into the other new business listed. You are welcome to hang out for it, but...
I will thank you for inviting me to, but I don't think I will. I respectfully decline. Thank you very much for hiring me today, and I enjoyed working with Diana and her staff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening, everyone.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And if there are any follow-up questions that you have, feel free to direct that towards Deanna. Michael enjoyed working with Deanna, and she would get those questions to him.
I sure will.
I will continue forward. We have 11 items of business that are fairly boilerplate. And then we have our last item, which is the railroad discussion of the offer that we received from them. And we do have Larry that's joined us online for that discussion. In the meantime, we'll continue forward. The next item is discussion and consideration of the 2022 tree maintenance bids. We have a memo from Sally with a recommended bid for Sigourney Tree Care for $7,000. We did have a new service that bid that was nearly double the price, one in the middle, and the recommended bid for $7,000. Is there anything I'm missing, Sally? Council, any questions on this item of business?
Have we worked with Sigourney Tree Care before?
It's a Jeff question. I don't remember.
Not always the lowest bid is the best.
Yeah, but in this case, I think because of the difference, we...
Yeah, there's quite a bit of difference between the top one
Iowa
River
and the bottom one. They're pretty close, the Iowa River.
What'd you say, Sally?
We annually budget
$10,000. And we talked through that at our nuisance meeting. This uses seven of it, and it's the main chunk, but I think, isn't there a piece that's going to be reimbursed partially? Yes. Of the seven, there's a partial reimbursement for one tree, and likely we will use six of our $10,000 budget, and typically we do two per year if we can.
Okay. I would make the recommendation we go with the approve the bid for Sigourney Tree Care for the amount of $7,000.
Second.
So I have the motion from Millie and the second from Fran to approve Sigourney Tree Care for $7,000. Any other discussion?
I make a suggestion that we keep an eye on how this company performs.
I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have reason to go to the other bidder.
No, I'm just saying with what we've had before, I think we need to keep an eye on it.
Absolutely. Other discussion? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Council. Our next item of business is discussion and consideration of the health insurance renewal. We have a memo from Kelsey, and good news with a 0.5% increase, and 10% was budgeted, and this is excellent. Anything else that you'd like to add, Kelsey? There is a scheduled meeting for staff on the 16th, but prior to that meeting, it goes to council first, and we're looking for approval of this renewal.
I'm making a motion.
Second.
Second. Okay, thank you, Elaine, for the motion, and Isla with the second. That's fine. Simple motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
I had a quick question.
Oh, yeah, please. Sorry, I missed you.
Does this mean the employee paid portion will also only increase by roughly 0.5%? Okay.
Yeah, currently the employees pay 10% for single and 25%, and it equals out to like 50 cents per employee, the single plan, and less than $5 for everyone else. So
that's per pay period?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I apologize. I missed that in the correct order.
No, it's okay.
Our next item for consideration is the fiscal 22 annual street report. Also a memo from Kelsey that explains how this is annual and related to our road use tax dollars.
Skipped. Skip to very important report.
Oh, the annual financial report. The street financial report. Yeah, so fiscal 22 annual financial report, similar in its...
That's just another report.
In its annual nature. Anything else you'd like to add?
Nope, just a summary of all the things that happened.
Motion to approve fiscal year 22 street finance report.
No, this is
not the annual report.
Yeah, that was my bad. So thank you, Isla, for your motion. And who's the second?
Steve.
Steve with the second on the annual financial report. Any discussion? I've missed. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Next, what I mentioned first, the fiscal street financial report for 22.
to do every year so we can get our road use tax dollars.
I make the motion to approve the annual street finance report.
Second.
Thank you, Millie, for your motion and Bethany for the second. If I haven't missed any discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
This is a resolution.
Resolution.
Oh my gosh, I am so clunky tonight. Again, I think it's because I'm nervous. A roll call vote. Sally, please call that roll.
Galt?
Yes.
Linsman?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Steigers?
Yes.
Youngquist?
Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
And that is adopted. Our next item, also a resolution, is different than we've seen before. This amends our purchasing policy for the city of Washington. It's related to the SCBA purchase that's pending for the fire department. Sally, would you Kelsey, would you clarify to council what they need to know about this resolution? Sure.
So we received the Assistance to Firefighters grant for the new air packs. And one of the things that FEMA makes you do is make sure that you comply with all the fun purchasing things that they require, like conflict of interest statements and making sure you're getting bids for certain amounts, which we do follow anyway, but they have a lot more strict requirements. And then I did also add one thing in there regarding like brand preference. So the reason for that is if we change to a different air pack brand, we would have to change out all of like the masks and the tubes and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So we only got the one, or we're only going to plan on getting the one quote from the company that we already have, because we already have all this stuff for that. So that is added in as well. This is copied and pasted straight from the FEMA website. So there's nothing like super exciting about it, but just trying to cover all our bases, because if we were in audited by the feds, then that would not be good that we didn't have this.
But the specific piece that you drew attention to is in the event.
What page is that on?
It's on the third page, and it is the fourth paragraph. In the event quotes being received would require a department to change out multiple pieces of equipment to accommodate a different brand, the current brand will receive higher consideration as to not ultimately incur higher costs. So that line is added because of page 3, paragraph 4. And that's what you were referring to, that is specific to our situation.
Yes. Okay.
Ultimately, this is necessary to adopt in order to receive the federal grant, and it's been reviewed. Kevin, is there any concern that you have a reason to not pass this?
No, this is the standard. I've dealt with FEMA enough. It's the standard procedure.
Thank you, Kevin. Any other questions for Kelsey or Kevin?
I make the motion to approve this resolution for amending the purchasing policy of the City of Washington.
Thank you, Millie, for your motion.
Second.
And Bethany for the second. Discussion. Fran.
Question. Can we elaborate that or specify that just for the fire equipment?
I'll defer to Kevin on that question.
I would leave it in as a more general, because there's some other items and that I'm used to, you know, like traffic equipment where the signals and everything are the same brand and if you switched out. So I don't think we would use that unless there was a specific brand. Otherwise we'd use our general policy. We'd get three bids.
Yeah. All right. That's what I didn't want to get away from.
We're not going to keep that only in open. This instance.
Okay. I'm good with it. Thank you.
So I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Sally, please call that roll.
Linsman?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Steigers?
Yes.
Youngquist?
Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
Galt?
Yes.
Thank you, Council. Our next item is a resolution that would accept the Fifth Street and Lexington overlay project as complete. You can see by the memo that this is recommended by County Engineering. Deanna, anything I'm missing?
Didn't we also do the overlay on the street to the north?
Yeah.
18. But that?
This is just for this part.
Oh, just for this part. Mm-hmm. So it's separate. Okay.
Council, other questions?
Make a motion.
Second.
I have the motion from Elaine and the second from Steve to pass this resolution accepting the project is complete. I haven't missed discussion. Sally, please call that roll.
Yes.
Tiger? Yes.
Youngquist? Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Council. Our next two items are related to the East Adams Street project. We have a change order in the amount of $4,320. And we have a pay app for $277,974.89 to be considered separately, but they're kind of in the same memo from Garden and Associates. Anything that I'm missing with these two items of business?
No.
Council, questions or motions for first change order number one?
Make a motion we approve change order number one for the East Adams Streets project.
Thank you, Fran, for your motion and Elaine for the second. I haven't missed discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Our next item is pay app number four, which was $277,974.89.
I make the motion we approve this pay application number four for East Adams Street.
Thank you, Millie, for your motion.
Second.
And Fran, just under the wire with the second to approve this pay app number four. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. We'll continue forward. We have two first readings of ordinances that ultimately are related to the urban renewal area for Bazooka and the residential district surrounding. It is a mouthful of a whole paragraph of a first reading of an ordinance. Ultimately, it's to levy on this urban renewal area. Is that correct, Kevin?
So basically what you're doing is, and bond council wrote this if you couldn't tell, basically you're setting the TIF values at the value of the land before it was built on, so you're capturing all the value once the house or once any improvements are put on. So you're capturing that TIF value to pay yourself back for improvements that were done in that area. So these are just two, these need to be sent to the auditor before the end of the year so we make sure we capture that value.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kevin. Any questions on these separate ordinances?
You're gonna read it all.
Unified South Central Residential Urban Renewal Area in the City of Washington, and it goes on to list all of the districts. I find that satisfactory.
Wow.
To you.
Yeah, you can just say the amendment number two project area, that ordinance,
okay.
And then we'll just
second that.
In the parentheses at the bottom.
Okay. We have the motion from Elaine, and we have the second from Millie on this first ordinance, and that is specific to amendment number two project area. Fran.
Is there three readings on this?
Yes, we'll be doing
okay,
it again.
Just making sure where we're at on it.
Yeah. Well, then I would direct. I would direct Sally for our next meeting to list the second and possible third reading. So full disclosure is given in order to do that. I don't believe that would be recommended tonight though, but at our next meeting we could. Thank you for the motion and the second. Any further discussion? Sally, please call the roll on this first reading for amendment number two project area.
Yes.
Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
Yes.
And that will move to its second and possibly third reading at our next meeting. Our next item is the proposed first reading of an ordinance that does the same thing for the Bazooka Farm Star LLC project area.
I make a motion to approve the discussion for the first reading of the ordinance providing the general property tax levy collected each year for certain property located within Washington, which is Bazooka Farm Star LLC project area.
Second.
Thank you, Elaine, for your motion, and that's Steve with the second on this first reading. Any further discussion? Sally, please call that roll.
Youngquist?
Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Clinton?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Steiger?
Yes.
And that will move to its second and possible third reading at our next meeting. Our next item of consideration is the first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 69, parking for electric vehicle only. Of course, this would be at our electric vehicle charging station on Washington Street.
I'll make a motion. Accept the first reading of the ordinance amending Chapter 6
Second.
Thank you, Elaine, for your motion and Millie for the second. Any further discussion? Sally, please call that roll.
Ernest?
Yes.
Galt?
Yes.
Lindsay?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Tiger? Yes.
Justice? Yes. Thank you, Council. We'll have that second reading at our next meeting. The next two items are second readings. The first is Chapter 3604, amending speed zones. This is, of course, on West Buchanan.
Make a motion to approve the second reading of the ordinance amending Chapter 36.04 speed zones.
Second.
Thank you, Fran, for your motion and Millie for the second. I haven't missed discussion. Sally, please call that roll.
Yes.
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 Thank you, Council. We'll have the third reading at our next meeting. Our next item is the proposed second reading of Chapter 6502, Amendment, the Stop Sign on West Buchanan.
I make a motion to accept the second reading of the ordinance amending Chapter 65.02, Stop.
Second.
Thank you, Elaine, for your motion, and Steve for the second on this second reading. If I haven't missed further discussion, Sally, please call that roll.
Yes.
Moore.
Yes.
Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
Thank you, Council. We'll move to our final item of new business, discussion and consideration of the railroad merger counteroffer. Kind of the fun stuff I've been looking forward to. We have Larry that's joined us from CP. Virtual Larry, can you hear us?
I can. Can you all hear me fine?
Yes, we can.
Somewhere I'm coming here. Here we go.
I can. I spoke with Ariel at some length, and I both have the formal offer and then the email that summarizes. For council's information, and we can get into the specifics, ultimately, our counter included a $1.75 million number. And if we were to close three crossings in this and everything that's pieced in, we land at $1.23 million. I feel good about the counter made by CP. If council, I would not recommend rejecting it, but we could accept it tonight, or we could table it. If you have specific questions, we can direct them to Larry. We can direct them to be, you know, looked at over the next 2 weeks, but that's where we are at in the conversation. Compared to other communities, I think it is similar, if not a little better, which accommodates for the impact that we have in Washington, Iowa. The one thing I couldn't get was any percentage of a quiet zone. Just unheard of. When I ask Ariel if there's any example whatsoever of a quiet zone being paid for in percent or number, she gave one example in Missouri of a city that has one single crossing, and that was at the very beginning of the merger, and said that it does not exist anywhere else. So I was not able to get that. However, the very first part, the community contribution, we could use that however we see fit. And she could have listed it as used towards a quiet zone, or as it currently exists, it's a contribution, and we could use it however we want. And of course, as everyone knows, we're not doing a quiet zone, full or partial. We're just in the middle of, like, going to do the study so we can make an informed decision. Larry, let me turn it over to you real quick. Is there anything I'm missing that you'd like to point out? And I'll turn it over to council for questions.
Maybe just a couple of small things, but I would start again by saying this is, I think, my fourth engagement with the folks in Washington myself. And I know Andy and Ariel had a couple before me. So I really appreciate the open and honest dialogue that we have had. I think we've set out from the beginning to make sure we were really listening to communities and really having a robust engagement with it. And I think, you know, great kudos to your administration and to you, Mr. Mayor, for living up to that and having a robust back and forth like we talked about. And I reiterated when I was on the last city council meeting with you all, and it's worth saying again, I think we look at these conversations as not being the end all be all of it, right? That perhaps you vote in favor of it tonight, the merger gets approved, and then we never talk again. We wanted to use these opportunities to set a good foundation for a healthy relationship going forward, and building trust and candor between us. So that's really the approach. To your point about what you laid out, I think maybe, and I think you mostly nailed it there. Maybe the only thing I would add is we did put in the agreement that we would waive any costs associated with the removal of crossings. you know, it's one of those things, there's no hard and fast number to that. It is always geographically dependent, but it's probably a good ballpark figure that that's roughly about a $10,000 cost per crossing. So, you know, not necessarily huge money, but certainly it is a cost savings that is real. And again, the more crossings you would close, the more that savings would be. I would again reiterate what you said about the $200,000 that is to be used at for the city's discretion. We don't necessarily have a care what you guide that towards. We wanted to give you some flexibility with that. And yeah, I think with that, I'll hold fast for any follow-on questions you have, but just very happy to be here. Happy we were able to have this conversation and looking forward to building on it regardless of what happens tonight. So.
Quick, I would remind council that this offer exists whether we close any crossings or not. So that could be 0, 1, 2, 3. I mean, it could be 4 if we wanted, but that is not built into the offer. There's no requirement to close or no number of closings required in the agreement that's presented. What other questions does council have?
I have a problem with closing any more than 2 crossings.
Well, and we don't have to. No problem, Steve.
I just let that go. And the other thing I've often wondered about in this whole deal is, what's these trains hauling and what do we have to have for hazardous equipment?
So that question has been asked of several times, and because of proprietary, and Larry can get into this a little bit more, it's not something that's really disclosed what train when and what it's hauling, but not included in this offer is the sending of 2 individuals to the specific hazmat training and kind of equipping us in case there was that type of event. Larry will be better to go into more detail, but I just wanted to start by saying we've been asking that question and getting as much information as we can. Larry, would you pick up where I left off?
Yeah. No, so good foundational comment there, spot on that, you know, some of what we haul is certainly hazmat. I think it's important for everyone to understand that that is part of our common carrier obligation. So some of that can only be moved by rail because of our focus on safety and our safety record. So that's a federal requirement that comes along with it. It's not necessarily that railroads go out looking for that kind of work. It's something that is part of our common carrier obligation. So that being said, although that information isn't open to the general public, we certainly understand there is a need for local emergency response, state, regional emergency response to be aware of that and to track it. So there's a couple options for communities there. There is something called the Ask Rail app that is a free app that is available to first responders and emergency management planners. You basically just go online and request it. The railroad, that's your host railroad, so in our case, CP, would review the credentials of the person that's asking for it. You know, assuming they're the right person for that information, we would then release it. It's literally an app they can download on their phone. It gives them real-time information of what's in each individual car, not only the contents of it, but is that car full? Is it empty? How would you respond if that car were to derail? All those components of it. In addition to that, each community, and it's getting these same designated folks, can request through CP a hazardous material flow report, which gives you a general overview. Again, not in each individual car, but in, you know, the amount of trains that come through the area. How much is this? How much is that? So that information is available. Again, it's not available to the general public, but it doesn't mean that your community can't be made aware of it for the subject matter experts that need to know that. And that can inform some of your planning and your exercises. So to build on the point that the mayor made, one of CP's voluntary mitigation commitments as part of the merger is that each community that's within the scope, so again, that's you all are within the scope, we will pay for 2 members of your emergency management fire department to go to Pueblo, Colorado. So the United States is unique in the world where we actually have a Federal Railroad Administration, half owned and supported and half railroad owned and supported, large hazmat planning center in Pueblo, Colorado. And what they literally derail a multiple car train, catch it on fire and say, go now respond to it. And give them obviously the training on the front end of that, but then walk them through real world, what that would look like and how they should respond to that. So that is the type of training that we've committed to making and sending there. In addition to that kind of training, regardless of the merger, we can offer localized training that's along those lines. Obviously, we're not going to derail a train, but we can get folks up on a tank car. we can work your fire department through all the nuts and bolts of that tank car, identifying the hazmat that's in it, walking through. I was actually just here and I live in Elgin, and 5 miles down the road is Pingree Grove, Illinois, where we just did 2 weeks ago a large scale exercise somewhat along those lines here, where we walked a bunch of regional firefighters through it. So those are all options that either commitments we have already made to communities like Washington, or again, follow on exercises that we can do regardless of the merger to help make sure that your appropriate folks are ready for, you know, the, God forbid it should ever occur, but we want to be prepared for it, right?
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Larry. Other questions?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Elaine.
As I understand it, we have plenty of...
Your microphone might not be on.
We have plenty of foam to handle of a fire or a hazardous train wreck, but we really don't have a trailer to haul the barrels of substance. Is this going to be adequate enough that we can purchase the mobility to get the foam to the site of an emergency?
I would have to defer to Chief DeLong on the transport of the foam, but I know we have an agreement with IRE specifically for that.
Correct.
and our access to it. So I thought,
my understanding is we don't have an adequate trailer to move the material to a site of hazard. So my question is, I want to make sure that we are thinking on that as far as the amount. Also, my question is, going to be capable of handling the extra train traffic and the fact that that's
the underpass
or the underpass.
Question was about the foam trailer, which I would need Chief DeLong to answer, but we have just had discussions about the engineering of the underpass. Can you elaborate on the structure and its ability to handle the increased traffic that would result from the merger?
So one thing I want to say on the trailer, so the, I don't know if you all can see it right now, but I did throw a link in the chat. If you check on that, that has a very broad overview of the hazmat first responder materials that CP has pre-positioned across the network. So you'll notice in that it's got a tag there for Davenport. So we actually do have a trailer pre-positioned in Davenport, along with some other assets that are there, again, just in case something were to happen in the area. So I think it's also appropriate to, and again, these conversations may well have already happened between our regional hazmat folks and your chief, but we can certainly make sure they're connected and having a helpful discussion about where CP has assets pre-positioned, because we plan for, if anything were to happen along the network, do we have the assets ourselves to move them into the area quickly? And if not, do we have, you know, good connections with the fire departments there to support that effort, at least for the immediate focus until we were able to bring those additional assets? So don't feel like you're left alone to respond to that. And again, that link that I shared there has got some additional information on it, but I certainly can connect your chief with the hazmat. On that individual bridge, and I'm not familiar, what bridge are you talking about specifically?
There's an underpass in town on
North Second.
That Elaine is referring to.
Okay, so we can do a couple things here. So one, there are Federal Railroad Administration standards for how often we have to inspect all of our structures. And I would tell you that CP exceeds those standards as well. So we work along with the FRA. We have our own structural bridge crews that go out and regularly inspect those structures to ensure they're able to handle the railroad traffic on it now and able to handle any increase in traffic. So that's stuff that we have to do on a regular basis as part of our FRA requirement. Some of the details of that bridge system are, just like with the hazmat, are considered confidential for safety and homeland security reasons. But we do have bridge inspection reports that are available to the public on certain levels, right? And there's also depending on what we're able to do with it, we can have a side conversation where we can probably be a little bit more open and direct about that inspection reports with that. So I'm happy to facilitate that as well. But I would tell you, we're not going to send any train over that bridge if it couldn't handle it. Because the, as our CEO, Keith Creel, has said many times, and it's spot on, having a safe railroad means it has to be a sustainable railroad as all, right? So if we were to have the network were to go down in any form, it would be end our ability to be an effective railroad, right? So that's not certainly something we would want to do.
We did receive a an engineering report within the last 6 months. And as Larry just mentioned, but it did not go into great detail, but it just, it said, like basically bridge is good.
Yeah.
And that was basically it.
My worry is.
For bridges, passes inspection.
It's the flooding.
And the flooding more on our end with the INI and the upgraded pump and continuing to maintain that. We haven't had a major rainfall to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing we can't change, as we just discussed earlier, is gravity.
Correct. And on that note, I pulled that last engineering stuff and when we did four and some improvement to fourth. And there was information in there about the flooding on second. So I'm having a conversation with Steve Superior on updating that and what we might be able to do. So maybe we have some money here to fix some of that, depending on how much that costs and where we are with quiet zone and everything. So yeah, that is getting reviewed.
I'm not comfortable until we comes along. Like to get more information from Chief DeWalt.
And a note on that, I'm pretty sure that there is something that came out of, there was that meeting where Chief DeLong and went to a meeting and there's something about a trailer. I just don't remember specifics. Yeah. So I can talk to Brendan if you want.
Yeah,
and
I just,
report at the
I
next
just
meeting.
Really would like to know that it's at a real heavy expense, and but we have it. I'd like to be prepared, either cost-wise, if it's going to be our facility or something that's
okay. Other questions? See.
What about the utilities that run underneath the train tracks? Remember what happened last time when we had this problem with the sewer collapse or all the rest of it?
And I think that was related to our sewer, INI. And I asked Ariel this question, Larry, is about the vibration and any impact on underground utilities such as sewer and water that go under the railroad. And her answer, well, can you expand on it? And I remember what she said.
Yeah, so we have a very stringent right-of-way access application process that anyone, including obviously the city, would have to go through in order to do that. Those standards are set by a group called the REMA, which is the Railroad Engineers Association, and they're born out of many years of experience, I would tell you. So certainly all those standards that are put in as far as the engineering review that's got to go, the amount of depth that the pipes and everything have to put in are all in order to handle the max capability of that line. So it's not necessarily the number of trains going over, but it would be the weight of the trains going over, the speed, those components of it. So the fact that that is already the level that we're operating on, regardless of the train count, means we've already made the engineering standards to such a level that they can accommodate any increase in that traffic.
And that was basically the answer that Ariel gave me. She didn't give the acronym, but said that the study had accounted for that and that it includes no, I mean, yeah.
When that happened last time, we had a major problem. Okay. That's something that we still have utilities running underneath the train tracks. So over the course of time, something's going to happen. And I think we need to actually look very carefully at what would happen, because I know that last time we could have been financially responsible for the slowdown of the railroad. And we, I don't know,
because it was our utilities that were
right.
Insufficient.
And so that scares me, because all of a sudden the city of Washington should suddenly be worth or be having to pay several thousand dollars a day because our utilities underneath the railroad tracks didn't hold up to what they were
Would you?
If you're not familiar, Larry, when we were doing improvements on 4th Avenue, which included infrastructure, we discovered a void the size of a school bus underneath the railroad tracks and had to address it. And it was required slowdowns of trains in the interim, and we were not fined, but could have been. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I think this part of the discussion, and you made me think of it with the drainage component as well, is a key part of the great part of us having this engagement and discussion, right? Because these are all conversations that we can facilitate regardless of the merger, regardless of the community investment. So what I think would be a good next step is to take the utility access thing, the drainage thing, maybe have your public works director, whoever you feel is the best person, write a bit of a summary of what your questions and concerns are on that. Send it to me and or Ariel or whatever, the group of us, and Andy, and we can send that over to our public works folks and facilitate, you know, whether it's an in-person meeting or a virtual meeting with your guys and ours to walk through it. We're never opposed to having those meetings because we prioritize safety as part of it, right? So if you feel there's something that you think we should know to take into consideration for our operations, we want to be able to facilitate that discussion. So happy to set that up. If it makes you feel better in the process, I'm all for it. Certainly if it makes our rail network safer, we're all for it in that process too. So let's go ahead and do that.
Other discussion, Bethany.
Back to the overpass. Do we have a clear understanding of if that structure would need improvements in the future, whose financial responsibility that lies with?
Yes, that is another question that we have asked multiple times and gotten answered multiple times and still don't like quite have a clear answer. It's like,
okay,
both you, us. Can you answer that question, Larry? The bridge itself that was built in.
It's the bridge structure itself. If we own it, we're responsible for upgrades and maintenance of it.
And we've been under the impression that they do own it, the 1939. Yes, you do own it. Okay. So we're good on that.
Okay, thanks.
Well, one other thing I got to say is I have several people that are, and I myself, and we're increasing the train traffic through Washington, Iowa at a large, large rate. We're increasing the chances of some sort of a hazardous mess of on and on and on. I'm very worried that down the road in 20 years, or 15 or 5 years, we're going to have ourselves a mess. And I understand that the railroad's going to be able to do their thing, come through. We're going to have our problems with the crossings and all the rest of it, but you are raising our chances of having a large, I won't say fatality, but large mess in our neighborhood because of the amount of train traffic that has increased. And I mean, there's nothing you can do about it or anything else. I'm just making this as a statement. There is a lot of people scared that the percentages are going to catch us sooner or later.
Well, I would only push back to say there is something we can do about it. It's maintaining the safety record that we have of being the sixth, or for 6 years in a row, being the safest class one railroad operating in the United States. And the thing that makes the railroad the safest is putting money in the rail line. So the more trains you run on it, the more maintenance funds that have to go into that line, the more inspections that have to happen as part of that. So I think those are all things that will increase the safety of that rail line, not reduce it.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Larry. Other discussion, questions?
Question. With the increased traffic, are they going to increase the speed of the trains?
So some of these questions have been asked over the last 9 months over and over and been answered over and over. 40 miles an hour is the one for Washington.
40.
In some parts of the line, I think it's 60, but Washington is already preset, and that is 40. Am I missing something, Larry?
I didn't check that before.
Nope.
So anything else related to the counteroffer from Canadian Pacific?
I think it's a good offer. I just want to know what criteria we're going to use to close what closures.
So that's where, happily, there's no requirement on crossings, and it was council's direction to me that we wanted the study to be complete prior, because it will include information on the crossings, the traffic related to them, what arms and crossing equipment exist and don't exist at the different crossings, and that it was council's desire to wait for that study to be complete before making any decisions on crossings.
Mr. Mayor, do you want to motion tonight?
Well, we could either do a motion tonight to accept this counter, or if council, there's a few counselors that it sounds like they'd like to pause and table just for the question on phone.
I would like to have an answer about the trailer and what his thoughts are
on the trailer. I appreciate that tabling continues the conversation in good faith, because like I said, this is uncharted territory for me, but I feel good about the quality of negotiation and the offer that has been made to us. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with tabling. If council sees fit, I'm okay with accepting the offer as well.
I make a motion, we accept the offer.
Okay, thank you, Isla, for your motion.
To accept.
I prefer unanimous on these things. So I'd like to do a straw poll. Do I have a second first? If there's not a second, we're going to let that die, and I would take a motion to table. Would you be voting in favor of accepting the offer, or would you vote no?
Can we wait 2 weeks? Like, does that jeopardize the offer?
I don't believe,
all?
No, the offer, Ariel and Larry is our representative right now, has been in very good faith that as the merger continues, like that offer, so no, it does not, I'm not under the impression that the offer is jeopardized by waiting 2 weeks to accept it. Larry, are you?
No, I think if that's, you have a question that you want answered, and I don't have an issue with you waiting 2 more weeks for it.
So. I
if you don't feel I can answer it tonight, if you feel there's a chance I can answer it tonight, I'm happy to try and do that. But it sounds like you may have a question for your fire chief, not me per se. So,
yes, one of our counselors does. And for that reason, I prefer that we accept your offer with a unanimous vote and not a split vote. I think it would be accepted tonight, but I'd prefer that we've dealt with this before. For something of this magnitude, I'd like us to all be on the same page. Anything I'm missing? So Isla, I'm gonna allow your motion to fail, I'm sorry, but I would accept a motion to table.
So moved.
I have the motion from Elaine and the second from Fran to table. Larry, that's primarily due to the question that Elaine has for our chief and for my preference to have a unanimous vote. I'm gonna ask for a roll call on the tabling. Sally, please call that roll.
Moore? Yes.
Steiner? Yes.
Youngquist?
Yes.
Ernest?
Yes.
Yes.
So we will table, Larry, and it'll be on the agenda for our next meeting in 2 weeks to likely untable, and and it'll give us time to ask those questions. Specifically, I want to also connect, like you mentioned, on the public works. Maybe we can, I think we have your email address.
Yep.
Through all of the stuff. Perhaps we could connect on that to answer Steve's questions about infrastructure under the rail lines. Mm-hmm. Just to have a little more peace of mind with that portion. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to say? I'll give you the floor for a moment if you want.
No, I just dropped my email address in the chat as well, as just to make sure you got it again. So I can also take the question back. Again, the link on there that I put, I think will answer some level of that question for where we have assets, including foam in the area. But in the meantime, I can also make sure I circle back with our hazmat folks and make sure they're having that conversation with your fire chief as well, so that they're on the same page, sabbatical, about what resources are available in the area.
I'm going to shoot you a quick email right now so you have mine.
Okay.
And thank you for taking the time. I know you had to wait a little while. It's just been as our habit, and you had to get through a little bit first.
Yeah, no problem. I'll see you again in 2 weeks. So thank you for your time.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Council, that concludes our regularly listed business. We'll move into department reports. Chief Lester, you're up.
Still back in Vienna this afternoon. That's not at this point. Staff can do that. And take advantage of the warranty, the extra warranty that will come with that. So Water Advantage. Still looking at some other options. We need to have a better plan and a better plan on making sure our points on other options and we'll get there. See a lot of gifts at the Y
Saturday. Thank you, Chief. Kevin, do you have anything for us? Deanna.
Just one update from when I did this on East Adams. Phase three is set right now to be paved mid next week. So hopefully that.
All right. Thank you, Deanna. I can't remember what the order I'm supposed to switch to from this last time. Why don't we start from the middle and work out? Elaine, anything for us?
No, I've been communicating with Mia at the Academy, and working very hard, and really proud of her, and she's halfway through. I'm taking your thunder, but we've been communicating back and forth, and graduation, and I'm really excited.
Excellent. Millie.
Our Great Places Committee is going to be getting together next week for the first time and making plans for next year. So
I know when that meeting is.
I sent an email out. It was Saturday. It was a time I think you said you could do it. It okay. Is.
I think it's Tuesday.
Tuesday the 8th at.
Yes.
Yeah, 2 o'clock.
Yes, it sounds
good. So, yes. Other than that, I don't think I have anything.
I need to put that on my phone.
8 o'clock at night?
Tuesday the 8th at
Tuesday
2.
Tuesday the 8th at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's 2 in the morning.
2 in the morning, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, the first time I sent out the doodle poll, I had the wrong time zone. We were meeting by Switzerland time. That was kind of bad. We got it fixed.
I really have nothing other than the train scares the hell out of me.
Well, and I appreciate those concerns are valid. I also feel like the offer is equally valid, and I don't want to set us back. I hope we can continue to move it forward, and I think we will.
But just what worries me is we got a YMCA on the wrong side of the tracks.
Fran, anything for us?
I have four. July 4th meeting. Are we going to move it? Because that would be the first Tuesday of the month.
Is that a Tuesday?
Well, I'm getting wow, ahead because my college calendar is coming about. And I thought, okay, wait a minute. July 4th is a Tuesday.
We have a little bit of time on that. Why don't we get back to you?
I just thought I'd get it out there early. We good on that?
Good planning, Steve.
Well, I think we're good on that. We'll,
okay.
We'll likely move it.
How are we coming on the ammo plant?
Mary would give us a better update, but I know they're continuing to move forward, moving equipment in.
So there is things going on.
Yeah,
they're still moving forward.
Jeff and one of our firemen went there today to review some stuff. So
button
they
factory.
Are still a ways out.
Don't know about the button factory.
Still kind of like just sitting there. We're not doing anything with it.
I don't
know. Who
have
owns
any...
it?
Huh?
Who owns it?
I don't know.
I do not have any updates for you on that.
Okay.
The button factory is all rented out. It's all got bays in it. The old button factory?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got bays in it. There's on the back side, there's several garage doors that are all rented.
Okay. Hmm. All right.
Anything else for us?
Yeah. Scooter's Coffee. What are we going to do at the corner where the light, the pole comes up for the traffic light and the button? Are they going to do something with that yet? It seems like the only place they haven't moved dirt.
I've noticed that as well as I drive that route frequently, and I've been wondering. I'm confident they would be doing something there because it's all coming together. Yeah. But then that would be...
According to the drawing, that hill wasn't there.
And that would be kind of our building inspector. That's a Jeff Dua question.
Can you check into that for me, please, so we can get that solidified and get that out of my mind? Because to me, that's part of the old Captain Save.
Yep, gotcha. All right.
College baseball schedules are coming in.
Getting busy.
Yeah.
Isla.
I guess nothing special.
Yes, you'd like to go in reverse?
I have one.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
You forgot something.
I have been noticing that the building at the corner of South Marion and it would be West Washington, that has nothing in it. That bricks on the north side.
We've been working on that. And
really
our
bad. Good, because.
So the once around is good, but I'm just sorry. A reminder that any of these things can also be asked anytime during the day, week, mm-hmm. and we can stick it right to the right department and answer the question then too.
Okay.
So that's been discussed at nuisance at length. There's been a court thing with Kevin. There's been a directive for the building to be repaired. They came back with a contractor. They wanted to know if they could plaster it. They were told, no, you need to tuck point it. And that is all Sally and nuisance department and Kevin and Jeff Dua stuff.
Okay, good. Glad it's making progress.
Isla, were you?
Yeah.
Right. Bethany, you still end up last as the way the order worked out today.
I'm good this week, so motion to adjourn.
Thank you for your motion, Bethany. Your second from Steve to adjourn. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We adjourn. Thank you for joining us, Larry. See you soon.
Thank you, Sally, for your extra push to make sure I.